This is Mae Bressel from Carmel, California. It's tape number 403, dated August 24th, 1979, and it's side one. This is part two of my chronological order. It's not in order, actually, but some important events that have affected our lives up to the present time, and I'm running down these dates for you. This is a continuation of the tape of last week. In case some of you have ordered this, you'll need the first part that goes with it. You'll have to back order that back tape if you're ordering them just by numbers. I left off last week with the start of the National Socialist Movement that was born in Germany, February 24th, 1920. That was the year that Adolf Hitler's party was forming, and it also was the year the British intelligence and the OSS to become the CIA will set up mind control experiments in Canada, in Toronto, Canada, that later will be conducted all over the United States and then later applied all over the world. April 20th, 1920, Reinhard Gehlen joined the new German army. The Treaty of Versailles said that Germany couldn't rearm, but there was no intention of observing this treaty because they now had the Bolsheviks to face on the other side in Europe, and they preferred to arm the industrialists. The powers that be in Washington and in Paris, in England, decided to rearm Germany in preference to having to coexist with a communist regime. They sent armored vehicles, aircraft, submarines, and tanks, and conspired systematically and secretly to control this police state. By November 1933, there was this election, which was a sham. The Nazis won 92% of the votes. In order to get that percentage of votes, they had to kill all their opponents. And Mr. Gumbel has written a series of books in Germany that were published by Seymour Melman in this country on the perversion of the courts in Nazi Germany and the systematic assassination of at least 400 political and public officials before Hitler could win the election in 1933. July 25th, 1921 was 3 years after the Russian Revolution, and the Council of Foreign Relations was formed. The Council of Foreign Relations was developed into various groups: the Rockefeller Group, the Morgan Group, the Manufacturer Hanover Trust, the Boston Group, Chicago Group, the Bank of America Group, the Mellon Group, the Cleveland Group, the Insurance Groups, which were 20 companies, Savings Banks, which were 15 companies, Utilities, Transportation, Retailers, and the Industrial Group, which is 40 industries. And then the Lords of the Press were involved, involving the TV, the newspapers, the magazines. The Council of Foreign Relations meets regularly and determines state policies, international policies. Everything that affects our country has been programmed and come out from there. The counterpart is the Hoover Institute, the think tank out on the West Coast. And this is a counterpart of the Council of Foreign Relations, more radical even than the Council of Foreign Relations. This was actually set up in 1941, but in 1921, at the Leland Stanford University in California, because of graduate Herbert Hoover and his involvement with that university, they began to ship out the files of the Okraina, the Tsarist secret police files. That was in 1921. They were shipped to Stanford University. By 1941, the offices that held these buildings were moved to a new building. I was going to Stanford from 1940 to 43, but none of our teachers explained what was in the Stanford Tower, and anything about those buildings was not encouraged. Studying Western history or Western Civ, we weren't told what was there. Just jumping ahead, the librarian for this repository of fascist doctrines and Nazi doctrines, a gentleman by the name of Glenn Campbell, not the musician, with a PhD from Harvard, went on to be the advisor to Barry Goldwater when he was running for president in 1964. He works with Ronald Reagan, and Reagan appointed him to the Board of Regents, the University of California. He was the gentleman behind the firing of Angela Davis and keeping Eldridge Cleaver off the campus. Persons involved with the Hoover Institute that was set up, as I say, after the Tsarists were out, it was set up in 1921. One of the directors is David Packard, who was at the meeting in Monterey, California in July with Mr. Schmidt from Germany and Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger and Mr. Schultz and Mr. Hewlett-Packard, all of them were at the home of Mr. Bechtel here in Monterey, California. The Institute Board of Directors is a who's who of the very far right wing, represented by General Electric, Mobil Oil, Los Angeles Times, Mirror, Adolf Coors, Standard Oil, William Simon, former Secretary of the Treasury. That was in 1921 when the Tsarist papers were brought to California. 1922, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR, became a state, and in that year, Benito Mussolini, the founder of fascism in Italy, became the premier of Italy, creating a dictatorship at that time, and Adolf Hitler was being groomed in Germany for the takeover of the government in 1933. Mussolini was put in by British intelligence. He came to power to eliminate, in quotes, the mafia from Sicily, which really means incorporating the mafia into the fascist system. The Council of Foreign Relations in 1922 was meeting, and in 1923, Hitler's party was getting off the ground with a good start. It's when he instigated Interpol, the international police in Vienna, headed by the special agents of Adolf Hitler, the SS, and then the data banks were collected on who should be killed and who can live, and information on all families that they had in Western Europe at the time. Now it's expanded. In 1922, Aristotle Onassis was selling newspapers in Argentina and soon would become on his way to becoming a millionaire. The tobacco that he sold was allegedly hashish and dope, and he would import it from the Greeks and from Turkey and became a very accomplished businessman down in Buenos Aires at that time. In 1922, Henry Luce started Time magazine, and that became the official media for the system, the fascist system, and the organizations that took control of our various branches of life. As I read off the Council of Foreign Relations, you can see the banking, the utilities, the merchants, and so forth. In 1923, Hitler was active in Munich. He was in prison then, wrote Mein Kampf, but was leading demonstrations in Vienna and in Europe and writing his plans for the future. As I said, 1923 was the formation of Interpol. After the Versailles Treaty, this was put together. It means international police. 1938 to 39, Adolf Hitler used the Interpol extensively, and then his head of the Interpol, Reinhard Heydrich, who was the originator of the Jewish solution of gassing the Jews and so forth, was chief of the Nazi police. Heydrich was later assassinated in 1942, which caused a multiple series of murders in Poland as a reprisal for his death. Interpol has a history I'll fill in later through the years as we go to it, but it developed up through the 50s. It then went into opium and narcotics traffic in France, dealing through Indochina. In 1953, Colonel Lansdale had a six-week tour of Indochina and saw the French money coming from opium harvest. In 1945 to 46, the OSS and the CIA took over the Marseille ports and combined with Interpol and the mafia dealers in the narcotics traffic. Later, it became the heroin center of Western Europe, the Marseille Group. And, of course, at the time of Watergate, they were linked to the Nixon connections, the mafia connections. Interpol has been a international police and a drug trafficking operation and an organization for possible terror or reprisal since it was formed. And this was in 1923 when it was formed. President Harding was poisoned in San Francisco in 1924. He was in the midst of the Teapot Dome scandal that involved various personages. I don't have time on the tape to go through all of them, but the Doheny Oil was one branch that was involved with the Harding scandal. And Noah Dietrich, who steps into the life of Howard Hughes 1 year later, was representing the Doheny Oil interest and had worked for Doheny Oil. Lenin died in 1924 and Stalin took over. He began a purge of his opponents and thousands of officials were executed. In 1925, the Institute of Pacific Relations was formed, and it was from 10 different countries taken from the Round Table Group, and it was another front of conniving and manipulating of various lives and countries through their meeting places. As I say, the Bilderberger and the Trilateral and the Council of Foreign Relations aren't the only types of organizations that have had meetings. The Bohemian Grove takes place in the summer. The top leaders of this country and from all over the world are there right in California in July, having their get-togethers and planning their strategies. It's supposed to be a week of fun, but you can imagine what goes on between these various heads of states at that time. It's very well written up in a book by Domhoff called The Bohemian Grove. In 1924, Howard Hughes Sr. died. Now, Howard Hughes Sr. had invented a tool bit that was responsible for the drilling of oil for all the major oil companies, and he would not sell it. He leased this oil bit and had the monopoly, total monopoly on it. Right after he died, Howard was introduced to a man who came from California, a certified public accountant by the name of Noah Dietrich. And he went to court to prove that young Howard, who was age 19 and now an orphan, could handle the used tool company. This tool bit could dig through the hardest surfaces of the world. And it was John Paul Getty who said that without it, he wouldn't be worth 25 cents. So Standard Oil and Shell Oil and Getty Oil and Humble and all the oil companies were dependent upon leasing this particular bit that gets through the hardest surfaces. So that Howard had a monopoly, but he wasn't interested in that. He was interested in designing airplanes and flying, and he went to Hollywood to buy up the RKO to make the movie studio his toy. The chronology of the life of Howard Hughes is terribly important because he was violently anti-communist. He affected the movie industry with his politics. He was sympathetic to the beliefs and the statements of Adolf Hitler. And later, the Hughes organization could be a front for what I called the Nazification of America, because by later taking care of the body of Howard and getting him out of public life, his organization still was used for assassination teams and chicanery that was done by the government only under the guise of the Howard Hughes organization. Back to the chronology, in 1930, a large group of Russians, fascists, came to the United States. They were in Harbin, Manchuria from 1925 until 1930 and had their own fascist Nazi party and then moved to Connecticut, to Putnam, Connecticut. And this was a nucleus of strong white Russian community in that part of the country that had an influence upon various congressmen and public officials in the area. The invasion of the Tsarists and the Nazi rocket scientists were terribly important to changing the picture of this country from what it was before World War I and II. In 1930, the Broderband, the same religious group, the Afrikaners that I talked about before, began instigating the process of separating their children from their homes. Starting at age 7, they were given away from their homes to the church, and they got up at very early hours of the morning, 5 or 6 o'clock, they still do, and pray, and God and the state became one, and they became part of the Nazi secret society called Des Onnen Erbe. That's the Broderband and the control of small children in the church group, taking them away from the family and making them part of the state, was done by the Afrikaners in South Africa. By 1931, Aristotle Onassis was moving up the scale from Argentine, a very important area after, just prior to World War II, and after World War II, he had bought 6 freighters and resigned as a Greek consul in Argentine and was getting into the oil freighting business. Mr. E.J. Gambel, the author I talked about before, who wrote books 4 Years of War Lies, 2 Years of Political Murders, and 4 Years of Political Murders, was described in Time magazine September the 5th, 1932. It said, "The Nazis had a victory today. Gambel was ousted as the professor at Heidelberg. He was telling the students they should grow turnips instead of decorating war memorials." This was a big day for the university, the purging of a man who was exposing the political assassinations that were taking place. In 1933, the next year, was the Reichstag fire by the Nazis when Adolf Hitler came in power to blame the communists, the youth, the labor movement, and to begin mass arresting all opponents to the National Socialist Party, and Hitler's Black Order followed in 1934. But in 1932, the man who had been writing books and exposing the Nazi regime and the death list, the hit list, was removed from the campus in Heidelberg. This is important because the death list was still going on in 1973, November 15th, 1973. There was an article that the Italian fascists at that time had a death list of 1,617 Italians, that they had a strong political organization and a chain of crimes that were committed to get ready for the Italian fascist takeover the next time around. The neo-Nazis, the West Germans, had their death roll, and they were working with the Italians, and the assassination teams of Argentine, Brazil, the San Francisco police, the Los Angeles police, I believe, are linked to these various rightist organizations. These are masterminded in Spain, as believed by a Princess Borges, who is involved in these conspiracies, right-wing conspiracies, and the death list is also available if you take Interpol and the Mormon data bank and the genealogy of people. You can make up a list of who opposes various administrations and who has to be wiped out. Prince Borges was a World War II hero. He was the leader of a small group, a clandestine group of rightists, and he disappeared in 1971 in Spain, but they believe it's his activity that was responsible, exposed in 73, of this death list of that many people. So that is multiplied. In Germany, it was 400 before Hitler came to power, but in order to get fascism back in Italy or in the United States or Germany, the deaths have been many, many thousands more than this. But in 1973, there was an article on the death list of the Italians. In 1933, Adolf Hitler got the majority in the Reichstag. Adolf Hitler made the cover of Time. By then, Henry Luce was beginning Fortune magazine for the financiers. In March of 1933, Hitler took absolute power over the German people, and the book burning began by May of 1933. The concentration camp at Dachau was established in March of 1933. In April, the Jewish boycott was declared, and all Jewish businesses were to be boycotted. April 7th of 1933, all Jews were dismissed from civil service and denied admission to the bar. April 26th of that year was the formation of the Gestapo. May the 2nd was the dissolution of the free trade, and as I say, the book burning began, and the German state and the Nazi Party were launched. Across from Germany, over the United States, Jack Ruby had moved from Chicago to Los Angeles to Santa Anita with the mobsters, and he was working with John Rosselli, who was assassinated at the time of the Senator Church hearings on organized crime and the Kennedy assassination. Rosselli worked with Sam Giancana and Robert Mayhew from the Howard Hughes Organization to set up assassination teams, and Jack Ruby was moved from Chicago to Santa Ana with John Rosselli, in 1933. In 1934, there was a plot to seize the White House. It's written up in a book by Jules Archer, and the book came out in 1973, but this was in 1934. This plot was planned. Hitler was in power, but put in there by the U.S. corporations, and goodness knows we could put many, many dates into these vacant places. There's a big story in that. Mussolini was in Germany and the United States. Bankers and corporations wanted to seize the White House away from Franklin Roosevelt. They didn't like Roosevelt, and they were going to use the veterans from former wars to get this going. There's a congressional report, and it's filed February 15, 1935, on the report. It went to Congress. It was verified. Nobody was prosecuted. Before Roosevelt was in office, Harding had wanted a dictatorship. I have a copy of the New York Times. Large, whole front section page, Harding wants a dictatorship. But after Franklin Roosevelt was elected, and we still had the electoral system, or seemed we did, there was this complicated plan to take over the United States government. A man by the name of J. Howard Pugh, a longtime friend and associate of Robert Welch and the man who formed the John Birch Society, contributed to what was going to be the overthrow of this country. It was called the American Liberty League. And George Smedley Butler was approached to head this group, and he's the man who exposed the plot, the plan to set up the American fascist dictatorship, to have a three-way going between the United States, Germany, and Italy. In 1933, by then, Aristotle Onassis was a millionaire several times over, and he would soon be on his yacht with Winston Churchill and Jacqueline Bouvier, and a young man by the name of John Kennedy would be visiting his yacht with his all-German crew out in the islands off of Greece. In 1934, the Swiss banks became the hall of secrecy. There's a book, The Swiss Bank Connection, by Leslie Walker, on the use of the Swiss banks from 1934 on for funding fascism and rightist cause, and the connivings that went on in Bern, Switzerland with Credit Suisse. Credit Suisse later became the funding for Permandex that was behind the plans to kill Charles de Gaulle, that set up assassination teams in Oaxaca, Mexico, worked with Clay Shaw, who was on the board of directors of Permandex, an organization from Montreal and New Orleans and all over the world, Italy and various countries, with the assassination teams involved with Permandex. The Torba document talks about Roy Cohn working with Permandex. Roy Cohn also worked with Aristotle Onassis and Johnny Meyer. At a time, they were making a cash settlement for Jacqueline Onassis's divorce, her settlement of $26 million. But we'll get into that a little later. I don't want to rush this now. Henry Luce has been chronicled very, very carefully by Charles Spears. He talks in his chronologies that he has his running chronology of the covers of Time magazine of Mussolini and Adolf Hitler over and over again, and later Chiang Kai-shek, Henry Luce, Time, Life, and Fortune, was promoting the various fascisms and was a big power behind giving recognition to Mussolini and Adolf Hitler and giving them credibility and praising them for the job that they were doing. Luce wrote in 1938, "National Socialism of Hitler is thoroughly misunderstood in the United States. It is a thrill, I confess it, to touch, however briefly, such a period as the Germans under Hitler. I know of no such men of courage in America. We have forgotten in America what it is like to be with men who will fight. We need more of the German way in America. This is necessary to civilization." Throughout the years 1934, 36, 38, on up till war was declared, we were supplying Adolf Hitler with arms. General Motors Company, Ford Motor Company, were suppliers of 90% of the armored trucks that Hitler used and 70% of the Reich's medium and heavy trucks. In 1934, while this was going on, the propaganda for fascism in the media across the nation, Randolph Hearst papers, has been exposed by George Seldes. He covered this whole area in his little news sheet, in fact, and they've now been reproduced in large volumes, four volumes, and he goes into the news media and their support in addition to Henry Luce. In 1934, Bruno Richard Hauptmann kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. That was important because it involved persons from Germany and planted evidence. And there's indication that organized crime and other persons did the killing of the baby. What happened was that it turned Charles Lindbergh, an American hero, against his own home country, and he moved to Europe. In fact, he was supposed to move to Germany the day that they invaded Poland. He had been awarded honors by them later, in a couple of years further along. And Charles Lindbergh's pro-German stance was enhanced with his anti-American position after the baby was killed. In 1935, Germany took over Interpol. It was formed by them, but the Gestapo took it over completely. The home was originally in Austria, and then it was changed to Germany with its swastikas and decoration. Hitler marched into the Rhineland in 1936. Time magazine praised Hitler for that. Roosevelt was renominated that year. The Spanish Civil War began that year. That was the year our family took a trip around the world. I was just 15 at the time. We were in China when it was invaded. Manchuria was invaded by Japan. We were in Palestine when there were bombs and riots in Palestine. And then we were one of the last American families to ever leave Spain. The Civil War had begun, and there were guns along the roads where we traveled, and the hotel was bombed. And we were sitting with friends of ours that traveled with us in an empty dining room of a huge hotel, sitting there having our dinner, and the Civil War had actually begun, and hotels were bombed. And I didn't even have the faintest idea at age 15 what was going on. Life magazine was started in 1936. That was a very important event. It was the Life magazine that had the big cover article about Lee Harvey Oswald with the gun and the rifle and the story that he was the assassin of John Kennedy. They used that big picture of Charles Manson with the eyes, making him look like a Rasputin type who had invaded the hippie music scene in California. James Earl Ray, the negligent with no family, the wanderer, who later turned out to have lots of support and money in the St. Louis area and was allowed to escape from the St. Louis prison. Life magazine covers up these crimes visually. They did a wonderful job of giving you instant news that was a lot of lies and praising the very assassination teams and not fingering them for the murderers that they were. Edward VIII abdicated in 1936. He was notorious for being pro-Nazi and moved down to the Bahamas later, and in 1935, just preceding that, they started the Judenverboten, that means no Jews in German, in 1935. Signs on the towns, in towns, villages, restaurants, and stores in Germany, Jews not allowed, Judenverboten. And the Reichstag passed their Nuremberg laws, anti-Semitic laws, about being able to hire people who are non-Christians and going to universities and education. The Spanish Civil War of that period was the proving ground for Adolf Hitler and Mussolini. It was the time when the Vatican was paid off to stay out of the conflicts. They were to stay silent during the whole period of fascism in exchange for large hunks of property that made the Vatican very rich. And from 1936 to 39, it was a knockdown fight with America, in quotes, having a neutrality except for those courageous Lincoln Brigade members. And then Franco became the head of Spain, and the loyalists were put down. In 1936, the Ford Foundation was started. They're slow learners. The Rockefeller Foundation was way ahead of them, identified as a non-profit institution, and this would contribute to, in quotes, some of the solutions of problems, significant national, international problems. And, of course, again, it became a medium to fund all outlets of communications, later to give grants, to control the news media. And I can't yet see what the Ford Foundation did. They were scandalous in rental problems and problems with labor and minority. But this was founded in 1936, and that was the same year that Hitler and Mussolini formed their Axis and their pact, and the same year that they included Japan in the pact. By 1936, Charles Lindbergh was inspecting the German Air Force, and ITT, an American corporation, was making airplanes for the Luftwaffe and supplying Adolf Hitler with all the means to wage his war. 1937, Amelia Earhart's plane flew down, and she disappeared. There's been books out, and the subject has been brought up that she is alive in New Jersey. That the purpose for keeping all of this secluded would be to escalate anti-Japanese feelings during the war, because she was a heroine for her flight records and her courage. And when her plane went down, it would cause people to believe that the Japanese had captured her. That was the story going around, and maybe whip up some feeling towards getting the war going a little stronger. By 1937, the Buchenwald concentration camps were open. Austria had been annexed to the Third Reich, and the same anti-Jewish principles and anti-Semitic laws were applied in Austria, and France failed to provide refuge for the German Jews. They said they wouldn't take them in. Passports of Jews were marked with the letter J to identify them. We're up to 1937 on the other side of this tape. We'll continue with that year, 1937.